everybody, and welcome to Bad End, episode 98, two away from the Big 10-0. I am your host, Kyle Cookstell, joined as always by my co-host, Joshua Calixto.
What is up, gamers? Feels like it's been longer than 2 weeks since you've been on the show for some reason.
I don't know what it is, man. It feels like I think everyone's like vaccinated or getting there. Shout out to people who got vaccinated.
I just got my second dose today.
Good job. You might crash while we're recording this podcast. I think it feels like the calm before the storm of the world reopening a little bit. And it feels like everyone, we're still like in pandemic mode, but we're not quite open yet. So we're like in between two realities. So time.
There's an anxious excitement in the air.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's not like, just COVID.
Right.
It's not the COVID like particles.
The fact that we've all been locked inside for a year.
It's been so long.
I've had this weird thing recently with video games where it's like the opposite of like when I am idle and I don't have anything to do, I just kind of like play video games as like my background thing, mm-hmm. you know? But I've noticed this past week or two, it's been the kind of opposite where like I do something else to idle myself that is not playing video games.
Yeah.
To the point where it's almost like I would almost rather be doing something else than playing a video game. Like I've noticed even when I'm at home, I'm like, nothing to do right now. What should I do? And it's like, I don't want to play video games. I'll do something else.
I just remember being like, oh man, there's so many games are coming out. I wish they would just stop making games for a year and I could just catch up. And like, we sort of got that a little bit where like the world fucking shut down. But like, I have like so many video games and board games that I haven't played. And like in the pandemic, playing them is like weirdly now at like the bottom of the list of things I want to do. Cause it just feels like, I'm like, I don't want to, this is not like this. I don't want to shut down like this because it's like, it's like so obviously feels like you're trying to distract yourself in a way where you're like, I got to pass 4 hours before I guess I go to bed and wake up tomorrow to go to work again. Guess I'll play a video game. The passion, like you don't want to play video games because it's the only fucking thing you can do. It sort of sucks a lot of the fun out of it. You want to play them because they're a thing that you like, but when everything else is fucking shut down, you're like, well, I guess I'll level myself in Final Fantasy.
Although I did kind of play some backlog stuff during quarantine. Mm. During quarantine, not like recently, you know?
Yeah.
But you're right. It wasn't the kind of thing where I was like, I have to play everything. This is my chance to do the backlog stuff. It's like, you know what, dude? It's a backlog for a reason, you know?
I encourage you to... Ooh, I just dropped my pen. I encourage you to liberally hide games from your Steam library. I sort of have like a list of stuff in the order. It's almost like the phrases they use in like baseball. I'm like on deck, playing, benched or something is how I organize my Steam games. And if something's like in like the benched section and then like gets turned into the water boy or something, I'm like, you're out. I'm never going to play this game. It's never going to make it up there. Like I've got to play all of the Dishonored games before I play this game and that's not going to happen. So bye. And then just like hiding shit, just like constantly highly recommend it. Cause it makes the backlog feel smaller, but then also right. Like we both work jobs. Like I get like done with my job and like my job is on the computer. I'm on a computer all day staring at a screen. And like, granted, when I leave, I also stare at a screen and like watch YouTube or some shit, but I don't like leave with a ton of energy to like really get into Total War, Three Kingdoms. I would like love to do that, but it just feels like I don't have like the mental space because it's just so like every day is like just one more day.
Yeah, I mean, I also suspect this is like this will be a relatively short-lived thing just because it's a novelty to kind of be able to go outside and do stuff and like go out and eat and visit places. And see people.
Yeah.
So I think once that's a normal thing again, things might change. You know, like this week I went out and played tennis twice. Like I've never even played tennis in my life, but some videos came up on my YouTube recommended about tennis. I was like, oh, I want to play some tennis. Like, ask my sister to go out and play tennis with me. Like, it's weird. So I'm doing that. But that's like not something I would have done otherwise. I'm not like a super outdoorsy type of guy. So yeah, I mean, it's nice to be in this position, but we'll see what happens in a couple months. It's hard to tell where anything is going to be, you know?
Yeah. I'm interested to sort of see, I don't know. I'm interested to know what happens with games. Cause I feel like I never had more time to potentially play games with like as many games as I have on like every platform, right? I've got like, I don't know, 600 games from Game Pass and whatever the fuck's on EA Play and my whole Steam library, and I've got a Switch and a PlayStation. But at the same time, like none of that stuff was so good that like it really drove me to just play the shit out of that during quarantine, which if anything feels like one of the best times to like really get into something. So I'm interested to know if there's any sort of like knockdown effects of that in the game space. Like I'm trying to think of like what kind of game I'd want to play during the pandemic, I guess is what I'm getting. And like we played a lot of Animal Crossing, right? Baden's game of 2020, Animal Crossing. And I love the shit out of Animal Crossing. But even then, like now I'm like, I mean, we're all just depressed and nothing is fun. It's like, I'm trying to imagine like what does like game design mean right now? What does it mean to like and play a game?
Yeah, I mean, having video, like making a video game as your job probably doesn't help in your ability to go through your backlog and or no. play video games with like all of the rest of your free time, which is probably not that much.
Yeah. Or like, I know, you know, like I'm married. I want to like hang out with my wife. So we like watch TV and shit. And like, I can't just devote, you know, I can't put the 120 hours against Total War that I want to put. I just can't really do that, especially when like so much of my other time is doing other stuff. And like, yeah, making games.
Speaking of this.
Yeah.
The game I've been playing this week mm-hmm. and have been playing is freaking Near Replicant V2.
Could you say that off the top of your head? Because that would have been really impressive.
No, that's like version 1.224744. There's
a letter in there too, I think. I think an A's in there.
I don't know. I don't see a letter in here.
What do you think?
I had started playing it as of last episode, but I beat it. I got the first ending at least, which if you know Nier Automata, the multiple endings is a big part of the game. Although I'm learning that it's not as big of a thing in this one. Like there's other endings when you kind of beat the game multiple times, but they're not an integral part of experiencing this one the way that they were with Automata. I almost felt like the best part of Automata was those endings. Whereas with this one, I think it's kind of like extra content that provides a lot of helpful and maybe even in some cases necessary context to get the full story. Mm. But it's not the kind of thing where it is what makes the game what it is. So yeah. I'm doing this thing where like whenever you save the game, it shows you how many hours you've played, and I'm on my second playthrough. So most of the stuff is stuff that I've seen before. Like they're not really showing you, you're just replaying the game again, essentially. But there's so much kind of bloat in the side quests that when you're only doing the mainline story stuff, it goes by a lot faster, which is weird because I'm playing it and then like half an hour will have passed between when I save and the next time I save. And then I see that number in the ticker thing. And I'm like, I just played, you know, half an hour, 45 minutes of this game. And it's all parts of the game that I already played. And that just means that half hour of my life is just
gone.
I just spent that shit replaying like a thing that I already, and there was nothing new about it. Maybe I did a little faster because my character is higher level, but that's it. And it's like, I think it's cool that there's all this extra context and stuff to uncover with this subsequent playthrough, but I don't know if it's worth it. I don't know if I really like the fact that I'm dedicating this time to playing another playthrough of this game.
When did this game come out originally?
I have no clue.
Like 2007 or something? It's pretty old, right?
Yeah, it's pretty old. Near 2010.
Okay. That's still around, like, that in my mind is still like Xbox 360, like triple A-ish bloat era, where you've got like the 50-hour shooter because it's just like, for whatever reason. So I'm wondering how much of this was sort of a product of its time where they're like, third-person character action game, it's 60 hours if you really beat it, or it's, you know, 12 hours if you just play through it once or something.
Right.
So there's like so much shit around then that was like so fucking long. Like, just like shooters were so long. Like the fucking Halo campaign, like Halo 3 and 4's campaign is like long. And then you get like, I don't know, we start getting to more reasonable times a few years after that. But I'm just wondering if there's like a thing there where Yoko Taro's like, okay, we have to make this game be long, but what if we also make it be like, what if we just reuse this shit and sort of add more story context or something?
Yeah. It's very like, we need this game to be at least 30 hours.
Yeah.
And they didn't have the budget to do that. Clearly there's like a lot of parts of this game where they very clearly needed to be careful with their budget stuff and their money.
Mm-hmm.
Slight spoiler. I mean, a lot of stuff in this game is like, spoilers, you'll experience stuff that's like game. Really cool stuff that you just weren't expecting it to do. So spoilers for one of those things, it's not a plot point, but maybe skip forward like a minute, 30 seconds or 30 seconds to a minute. But there's like a text adventure sort of section,
mm-hmm.
where, and or like slash choose your own adventure type section where it's just showing text on screen. And it's like, it feels like it was meant to replace a dungeon. And then I remember someone in the Discord saying that it was like they didn't have enough money to make this dungeon, so they just made it like a text adventure section. It makes sense in the game because they made it like, oh, you're going into a dream or something like that. So it sort of shifts media into That's like funny. This text-based section. But yeah, it's stuff like that. And then there's a lot of repetition, a lot of side quests that have you just revisit the dungeons that you've already gone to and just collect items and bring them back to people. So yeah, it feels a bit shoestring ish at times, but I don't know. There's still things that I like about this game. And I feel like if I hadn't played Automata, I would like it a lot more.
Because, oh really? More, not less. Yeah.
Because Automata now to me almost feels like an improvement on a lot of the stuff that this game was kind of kicking off. I mean, people say that a lot of invention comes from restrictions, right?
Sure.
And a lot of this game feels like the inventiveness of how it's made is coming from a lot of the restraints that development seems to have been under.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of stuff where it's like the team pretty clearly trying to figure out ways around these issues, and they're doing it in a way, but they also have these very clear artistic directions that they're just like totally unwilling to budge on at the same time, which I really respect. And I feel like a lot of things may like a lot
this
of those.
This
like,
sounds very flawed masterpiece territory. Big, like 8.2 out of 10 flawed masterpiece.
If any game deserves to be called a flawed masterpiece, it's it's the Nier series. Because it's like, it's sort of defined by its flaws.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. The like the unevenness is make sort of it part what of it the is. Thing.
Yes. Right. Whereas most, quote, flawed masterpieces are like games that are really good relative to other games, but they have a couple bugs or some shit. Or like things that suck about them.
Here's a question.
Whereas this is like, the things that kind of suck about this game are also kind of what makes them different and what makes them good.
Do you think, like, so this game is now nearly a decade old, and looking at games that came out around the same time, like this game definitely doesn't look amazing for what else is happening around then. But, and at the same time, like what we would classify as like indie is sort of trailing this like aesthetic, and we're sort of in like PS1 aesthetics now, but we're maybe starting to get to maybe PS2 stuff, which starts to butt up against like this generation, like 360 and PS3. But I'm wondering, like, does this game feel still like a AAA sort of thing, or does it actually feel like, if you were to sort of like wipe away what you knew about the series, does this feel like something that like a small indie team could put out in 2021? Or does this still pretty much feel like, oh, this is a game that feels like it was made 10 years ago because it's not got X, Y, or Z?
It feels, I don't know. It feels kind of small. It feels kind of restrictive. It feels kind of linear. It feels dated a bit. It feels,
I would say it feels, what, from what I've seen, it feels unconcerned with legacy of games. And I feel like what defines a lot of indie games is this sort of like reflexiveness or something that's like really concerned with like really legitimizing itself through like looking like other stuff or playing like other stuff. And what it feels like, what makes Nier and like Nier Automata special, is that they're very confidently their own thing. And like, yeah, they're still video games, but I don't like read the same conservatism in them. But I've also, I haven't played the game, so I don't know if that, like, I don't know if that resonates with you or if you feel something different.
I mean, they are very like kind of agnostic of any sort of prevalent art style of their time, where they're just kind of doing their own thing and they have their own. I will say, one, I was getting a lot of like Dark Souls vibes from this game and from Automata now when I think about it in retrospect, because, okay, Dark Souls is very moody in large part due to the silence of its world, right? With how a lot of its characters, you know, you'll have a person in front of you, but they look like a puppet, and the way they speak is kind of like disconnected. And there's some weird haze that obscures reality to the point where the whole world has this kind of surreal feeling to it. It's almost like a Cronenberg movie or something like that, where Yorgos Lanthimos movie, where it's like everyone is talking and they're people in a space that is, you know, pretty familiar, but the way that they're speaking feels off, and the things that they're talking about feel kind of off. And you always get the sense that something weird is about to happen and something's kind of going on behind the scenes that is very off and that you don't have the full picture. And it's this like permeating mood that you find in every aspect of that game. Regardless, you know, you may have peeled back all of the layers of the story. You're at the final boss. You've climbed the mountain, but you still feel that sense of just impending doom, or like there's still a lot more that you have not seen or uncovered that makes it so that you're just not fully experiencing what's right in front of you. And Nier, I would say, is very much enveloped in that whole vibe. The whole game feels like that from the very beginning, even as you're like getting these big lore dumps put on you, even as you're seeing characters progress, you're like, I'm not getting the whole story. And then sure enough, it's like, beat the game again, you get a whole new side of the story that we didn't reveal to you the first time around, you know? And then I'm sure once I beat it again, it'll be the same thing. And then in Nier Automata, it's the same thing. But I like that mood, and I think it's different from a lot of the stuff that we tend to see in most games, period, because there's a tendency to kind of reveal everything and play all your cards, you know, as quickly as possible and show the audience what you got and do all the impressive fireworks stuff and not really leave much to the imagination. But Nier kind of is all about leaving everything to the imagination and just letting it kind of linger there in the back of your brain, while at the same time digging really deep into these like very human, emotional, at times melodramatic themes of like revenge isn't everything, or, you're not defined by the way that you look or the circumstances of your upbringing, or you can escape that. Except you're like, oh, this is really great stuff. This is cute. But you still feel like you're not seeing everything. You're like, well, what's the real point of the story, guys? Like, you're not showing me everything here. It's weird. It's like, I feel like the American way, or, you know, maybe the Western way, is to kind of shroud stuff in irony, you know? So like, you kind of know what's sitting behind the veil. But with this, it's like, it's hidden in some weird mystique that they're building from the kind of opening of the game. So I like that about Nier. I like that about these games. And that weird sense of not knowing what the hell is actually going on is kind of what keeps me playing it to a large extent. I mean, think about it. Think about Automata. The pitch for that game is like, you won't understand the game until you've played through it four times. Like the last, and then you play through it twice and you're like, yeah, I don't know, guys, is this really going to happen? Like, trust me.
Keep playing.
The third playthrough is like 2 hours long, where these, the other ones are like 40 hours long. So it's not even really a playthrough. And you're like, what the fuck is it? Yeah, like, what?
I'm like a crazy person.
That's a bonkers pitch, where it's like your wildest imagination would not assume that is a possibility of a video game. And it just is for these games, which is really cool. That it's exploring that as a possibility for where games can go. That being said, this Nier Replicant does not go as far with that stuff. And when it does, it feels like the product of some budgetary restraint that they had to take.
It's like B-sides to Automata.
Yeah, it feels kind of like they had to make these changes, and they just so happened to be like really cool experiments and really cool exercises.
Yeah.
With exception of a few times where there's just like some cool, like the whole camera angles changing thing, which is really one of the things that I've sung the praises of Nier in the past, is just dope. There's a fucking section of that game where it feels like you're playing Resident Evil. It has like fixed camera angles in the corners of like a really like a creepy haunted house sort of area. There's like isometric viewpoints there. It's wild. But yeah, that's my Nier takes.
I would say those weren't that hot takes. Those are reasoned takes. Reasoned opinions.
Wherever you are. And I know that my heart.
Oh man, is there a corny song? I feel like Nier is king of like corny pop song.
They're not corny.
Oh.
They're not corny.
It sounds like a matter of taste.
It's like, it's almost like Enya. You know, slash Cocteau Twins.
You're gonna tell me that's not corny? Putting the Enya song?
It's not really, I mean, or like a Cocteau Twins song where like you can't really understand what they're saying, you know? And it's,
yeah.
It's like Simlish almost.
Yeah.
Apologies if it's the real language and I'm like being fucking really inappropriate right now.
It's like a fake language for a civilization that never existed.
I think it is.
Well, speaking of languages that never existed and things that don't speak languages we understand, I've been playing Pokemon Snap. Excuse me. New Pokemon Snap. Do you play this?
I have not.
Well, have you played Pokemon Snap for the Nintendo 64?
I have.
It's like very, very similar. I've played it for like five or 6 hours. I think I haven't beat it yet.
Say 5 minutes.
5 minutes, man. Same game, same logo. No, I played it for like 5 or 6 hours, and I really liked Pokemon Snap 1. I think that also one thing that's very true about Pokemon Snap 1 was that was like my Pokemon generation. Like I really liked Red and Blue. So those are all the Pokemon that I grew up with. And this one has some Red and Blue stuff, but it's also a mixture of like all the other generations. So they got like the weird shit in there where it's like, it's a ring of flowers. This one's a stump, like stuff like that. And it doesn't like, I guess like at a baseline, so Pokemon Snap, for anyone listening who doesn't know what Pokemon Snap is, you are effectively, it's as if you got on like a roller coaster ride that went really slow, and they like showed Pokemon on either side of the ride, and you're supposed to like take pictures of the Pokemon because you don't actually, there's no free move as far as I know. And then you're like sort of the magic of Pokemon Snap is you're taking pictures of the Pokemon, whatever, they get rated. But the sort of magic of it is that throughout playing the game, you get like stuff that allows you to interact with the Pokemon. So you have get like apples and you can like throw them at them or like, and they'll go eat them, or you can like use them to sort of like knock a Pokemon. So they'll like fall over or fall out of something or get like alerted. And then you also have your camera has this ability to, I don't remember what exactly it is, but basically you can do something that makes a Pokemon sort of look up at you. They call it a say cheese button. But the thing is that, so each of these like sort of stages takes probably like five to seven minutes to sort of go through as a straight shot. But the thing is that if you can like do stuff to different Pokemon as you're going through the level, that will affect other things later on the level. So like if you happen to like perfectly time some way where you like knocked a bird out of a tree in the first like 20 seconds, that bird will like fly further down the course and like interact with something else. And so a lot of the, and effectively what this happens is that it makes other Pokemon appear sometimes, or Pokemon go through evolutions that you wouldn't just see if you didn't interact with it. So it's got this sort of feeling, I think like more so than like a lot of Pokemon games, it really feels like you're sort of in the world of Pokemon, where there are like real things over there that you're seeing and watching and like being with in some sense. And like no Pokemon game has really captured that, I don't think. Even like the mainline series ones, Pokemon are still like, they'll like have them as like sprites or whatever, sort of like lingering around. I guess maybe the latest ones sort of have more of the like open world stuff. But even then, like when you're fighting Pokemon, they're sort of in its own other place where there's like a turn-based thing and whatever, and it's weird. This just feels like you sort of exist with Pokemon, which is kind of like, that's really where the charm is at. And so you're like moving around and you're like taking pictures of Pokemon, and it's like, it's fun and kind of exciting just to like see the things. And so it becomes this like some shooting gallery, but you're flipping your camera all around because Pokemon can like fly, tunnel, where they can basically be anywhere. So you're sort of like constantly spinning around inside of your little seat trying to like take pictures of everything. And it's all right. If Nintendo was going to make another new Pokemon Snap game, like they did the thing, like this is that. It's maybe like a little more traditional than I would have expected them. I thought they might have like changed a little bit of stuff. And there's a few things that are different. Sorry, I have to sneeze. I thought I had to sneeze and it like came and went away. But yeah, so it's like it's a pretty like conservative new version of Pokemon Snap. I definitely don't like it as much as the first one because I don't know all the Pokemon in the same way. But even now though, what they've done that's different, whereas in the first game you would have single levels that you would just go through. In this one, there's day and night versions of each course, and different Pokemon come out at day and night. So then you can like level up the stages as well, the more you take pictures on them. So you, not only do you have a day and night course, but also the levels themselves can basically level up, and you'll see more Pokemon the more you do a course with. And yeah, it's fun, sort of like cozy. Yeah, I don't know. If you like Pokemon Snap, you'll probably like this game. It's the best way to describe it.
Man, I remember the original Pokemon Snap and that thing that you're talking about with the feeling of just existing with Pokemon. Yeah. That to me felt more, I don't want to say immersive because it wasn't immersion. It was more just like, it was what I wanted out of the Pokemon experience more than like catching Pokemon even was, you know, where.
Well, because also like at this time, right? Like you're, when that game came out, you have like a Game Boy and you're playing like Pokemon Red or Blue on like a Game Boy Pocket, which is like a black and white thing. And there's these little sprites and like you fucking see like Gyarados and Pokemon Snap and you're like, oh shit, that's that Pokemon. And it's like fucking crazy. Cause that's the, like, you only ever saw this little sprite and like, maybe you saw something in the anime, but like, that was the way to like see Pokemon in a context that felt interactive, where it felt like it was delivering on the vision of what it meant to like be in the Pokemon world.
And it's almost like, it's like playing a game where you're fucking John Marston, like killing wolves and skinning them or whatever, versus like going to the zoo, you know, and looking and seeing a wolf, where it's just like, fuck, this is what a wolf really is, bro.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
They're dangerous. Or like you see an elephant and it's like 10 feet tall or some shit. You're just
You see like a fucking
crazy.
Like
crazy.
Like a Pidgeot. I don't say it's Pidgeot. And it's like
the car
thing
brand,
is fucking like 8 feet tall. And you're like, that bird is fucking huge.
Yeah.
That was a big bird. And you're like, oh my God. And yeah, like shit like that is like, that's what's really cool. And that's also what's sort of hard about playing the game and like not really having played a lot of the newer Pokemon games, is that I don't have those associations of them on like the, you know, quote unquote small screen that makes this like big expression of them. I'm like hitting Magikarp with apples because I want to see Gyarados again. I don't even know what other like random evolution the toaster is gonna have or something. Like, I don't fucking care. And that was interesting, kind of like realizing that when I was playing this game, where I was like, oh, like a lot of my love for this game had to do with how much I played the other Pokemon games. Because also like the photography shit in the game is like not good. It's like, put a Pokemon in the middle of the screen and take a picture where its face is like right in the middle. It's like very similar to Umurangi Generation, where it's like, put someone in the screen, take a photo, and we'll judge you on the photo. Like that's all it is.
How
and so
big
that
is
part's
the
not
face?
Necessary.
How close
yeah, it's
were
like,
you?
Are they big in the screen? Can you see them? And you're like, yeah. And they're like, okay, well, 100 points for you, Pokemon trainer.
Yeah, it isn't. Yeah, that stuff is weird. But I mean, there's a lot of pieces out there about, you know, colonialism and like
any video game
destroying the land for this and like exploiting the flora and fauna for the sake of, you know, progress or what, human progress or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
But it is interesting how with Pokemon, that stuff of like becoming a Pokemon master is, to me, almost, it feels like it's hindering the Pokemon universe in that is the main focus.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if kids really want to catch and own Pokemon and trade them in their PC
catch
or whatever
mall.
As much as they want to like be friends with the fucking Pokemon.
Yeah.
That's why like Pikachu was so popular, because everyone was like, oh, I could be like, because Pikachu is fucking Ash's best friend.
Yeah.
And they're just like chilling out together doing stuff. And Ash never really put Pikachu in the fucking Pokeball. By the way, you know, Pikachu was just chill walking around with him.
Yeah.
Like that's what I want. That's the kind of experience that I was like really into. And, you know, it's fun. It's a more gamey aspect. The whole like leveling up your Pokemon and battling them and shit. But I don't remember what Pokemon I had in my party when I first beat the Elite Four. Or like what I, you know, like. The gamey stuff is not the persona of Pokemon to me. It's not like what was really compelling. That was not the magic of Pokemon to me. It was, and you know, I'm not trying to speak for everyone, but I feel like this is probably the case with more people too, which is that I think that's why Pokemon Snap felt more appropriate with what I actually wanted out of Pokemon, was because I got to like see the personality. I got to see, you know, what they looked like in the wild, as it were, like in their natural habitats, and just like be around them and be this like agent that's like observing and sometimes interacting with them in a really organic way. That's something that I never really got out of the Pokemon games, save for in situations where it's like you're fucking petting your Pikachu or some shit in yellow version.
There's like no personality for them in like any of the main. I think I think in part it was because the fucking Pokemon fan base is so toxic. Like, I think that they've sort of hamstrung Game Freak.
But it wasn't always that way. It wasn't always that way.
It wasn't always, but I think that there's like this sort of demand about what a Pokemon game should be, and it comes down to that gamey shit. So like, if Game Freak like put out a Pokemon game where there's like only 150 Pokemon that are all like have cool personalities and stuff, the fucking Pokemon fan base would like go in revolt because they like want all the shit in every single game. And it's like, that kind of sucks. There is that like new game though that like, I don't know what they're called. There's like some new one that looks like, it looks like it's like doing the like Breath of the Wild-ish transition to Pokemon that actually looks like kind of compelling, especially as someone like me who like fell off Pokemon because all the same reasons, like you do that like game shit once and you're like, okay. And then I don't want to like do it again. I don't want to like, it's like, also like the turn-based combat shit is like not that fun to do so many times. And like, even just watching like Sun and Moon, like watching the fucking cutscenes for like battles and just how every single battle takes like 15 seconds just to fucking start. I was like, no, I don't want to do 600, 700, 800 battles and like waste literally hours of my life watching this battle animation start to like use flame burst and kill someone in one shot.
Yeah.
Don't care.
Yeah.
Do not care. Like, don't even
when
do
I was
that.
Playing X and Y, I had that moment where I was like, having to sit through these battles fucking sucks, man.
Fucking sucks. It's like, it's not like, you know, Pokemon needs an auto battler. That's like a perfect Pokemon auto battle. Like, that's a match made in heaven right there. Just let them do their thing. I don't need to choose their actions. I trained them. They know what's up.
I have a perfect idea for a Pokemon game.
Open world Pokemon game.
Open like world Pokemon.
Classic.
Not action RPG.
MMORPG.
But an exploration game. Where you have to like, where your goal is to like traverse some crazy environment.
I think that's what the new
like
game
Death
is supposed
like
to
Pokemon
be.
Like Pokemon Death Stranding.
Yeah, that'd be fucking tight. I think that's what the new game is trying to be.
But you need to like use your, you need to like work with your Pokemon friends to help you like traverse dangerous territory.
It's like Golden Sun. It's like Golden Sun, Death Stranding, Pokemon. That'd be tight.
Your move, Nintendo.
I'm like, how do I gotta, I want to go like chill with Rayquaza in the clouds. How do I get up there?
The Pokemon Company. TPC.
I'll figure it out. Yeah. So I played some Pokemon Snap. It was, fine. this game also has got animation bullshit. Like there was like so much like pomp and circumstance for like every fucking photo you take. And you can take like 75 photos per run. And like the way, like they made it so you can just hold B and it will like tab through all the photos really fast. Yeah. But it's like new photo and it like puts a stamp on it. It's like ding 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 ding, here's your score, do a good job, and it goes to the next photo. And it does that for like every Pokemon you take a picture of. And I don't know if I'm old, but I'm like, that shit, like it's cool the first time, but I just want to do that thing you do in like I don't know, you play tactical. You're playing, I guess it was not really the same in like Knights of Lotus. No, Let Us Cling Together. But like in a lot of strategy games that are tactic stuff, you can like auto resolve battles and not show battle animations. I just want to like be like, don't show me any of this stuff. Just like next. I don't need to see the professor coming on screen to be like, good shot.
This is what and was just, nice about Final Fantasy 12.
You just put it on fucking 4X.
Fast forward and go. Then go. Okay, you kill him. Okay, you beat him. Okay, you beat him. And every once in a while,
it's
like, oh,
nice,
shit,
but I'm just like, I just don't.
Because
well,
it always plays out the same way anyway.
It's the exact same animation with like the same like four or five lines of dialogue. And I'm like, I don't care. Oh, one other thing. One actual sucky thing about this game. This might change. You might like get something later. But so you have each Pokemon now. You don't just get a picture of the Pokemon. The Pokemon picture doesn't also just have a rank. You have four separate tiers of photo for each Pokemon that has its own rank. 1 star, 2 star, 3 stars, and 4 stars. The thing about these photos is that when you submit a photo to get ranked to the professor so he can like rank the photo, you can only submit one photo. However, what that means is that if there's a new Pokemon that you haven't seen yet, you can only submit one photo of it. So if you happen to get a photo that's like a 2 star photo versus a 1 star photo, then you have to go back and do the course to get the one you missed. And the shitty thing about this is that the higher starred photos are like the cooler poses. So what this effectively means is that if you like happen to get the cool poses first, you have to like go back to the course and rerun through and like deliberately take worse photos of the Pokemon and like not do the fun stuff. Because and they don't scale. It's not like the 4 star replaces the 1 star. It's that each one is a different photo set. So if you actually want to try to complete the Pokedex and like you happen to take a lot of like 3-4 star photos, you have to go back and like do a boring run to take photos of these Pokemon that are like bad photos. And then also because it's sort of unclear sometimes like what the star ranks are and you're trying to get a specific thing, you've still got to sit through like the whole like 8-minute, 9-minute like run through this course to submit your photos, which is just like stupid.
And then if you find another star version, then you have to do it again.
Yeah. So it's like that's one design thing that sucks, is that you're sort of incentivized to like not try your hardest and like just do boring runs, which in this game can be like very fucking boring because you're literally on like a little track in a car that's going like 2 miles an hour. So you just sort of sit there and like do a really boring run. And then you're like, okay, well, my next one will be the fun one. It's sort of like, I don't know, you ever eat like Lunchables pizza and you got like three of the little pizzas? You never had Lunchables pizza?
My parents never bought us those.
You never like rebelliously bought them when you could have more than $2 in your pocket?
No.
Dude, you should do this.
I would like eat a bite of maybe a friend's like once or twice. I actually don't even know if I ever had a bite of one of my friends's, even though like my friends always had those.
The biggest travesty in modern America is like we just all ate cold Lunchables for lunch because like schools didn't have stuff to actually make them. So you just had cold Lunchables. Anyways, my story is not going to hit, but when you had Lunchables pizzas, you had these little small pizza things and you would always like, you had three of them and you had like one packet of sauce. So you'd always put like just a little bit of sauce on like the first two with like a little bit of the cheese and you'd eat those. But then the third one, you would like put all the sauce and like all the cheese to have like the best Lunchables bite. Yeah. That's what happens in this game, is that you sort of have to like, you gotta more space out your like excitement. It's like, don't have too much fun, because if you do, then you're gonna have to come back here and do boring stuff.
That's like what I do with Lucky Charms marshmallows.
Yes,
I see.
Exact same thing.
A bunch of marshmallows.
But this game's like, fuck you if you eat your marshmallows first, because you still gotta eat the other shit eventually too. And I'm like, why? Just give me like, let it cascade. If I get the 4 star, let me just have the other stars. Like, I don't. Yeah, that part. Maybe if you're listening to this podcast and you beat Pokemon Snap and you get some ability 15 hours in that lets you do 2 photos, sorry. But right now it sucks.
You know how the Lunchables pizzas always came with the sauce that was like tombstone
yeah.
sauce?
Yeah.
Is that a real sauce brand?
I gotta look it up now.
I was like,
I think so.
I was like, surely if they're labeling it, it's got to be a real pizza sauce brand, no?
Tombstone pizza sauce.
Which, if it is, do you really want to be the fucking pizza sauce brand that's like known for being on the fucking pizza Lunchable?
Here's a comment from 2 years ago on Reddit. Someone said, mimic recipes, Lunchables pizza sauce. Oscar Mayer, who I guess makes Lunchables, is owned by Kraft Heinz. Heinz only sells one type of pizza sauce in a size tin can. If you wanted a can, it looks like Sam's carries it. It's unclear. I don't think it's a real thing.
Tombstone sells.
I think
sells.
It was just straight marinara sauce.
It's a brand of frozen pizza.
Yeah, I knew there were frozen pizzas, but I don't think that like they make the sauce. Oh, someone says it's something called Boboli sauce.
Oh,
which
Boboli.
Sounds like
Boboli.
That sounds like a, something you say to be racist. Oh yeah, it's the Boboli sauce.
What the fuck? Okay. Well, all right. So how do we get here?
Well, we were talking about divvying up the your playthrough of Pokemon Snap, so it's fun.
Oh, right.
And it's like Lunchables.
I do want to play it because I do want to live in that world.
It's $60, I think. Oh, no, it's not $60. It's like not cheap. So, I mean, live in that world, though. Live your best Pokemon ethnographer life. There is also a sort of weird dynamic between the professor and his like too young assistant that's like very strange. But you'll have to play it so we can talk about that because it's weird.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting side note there. What do we want to do? What do we want to do? I mean, I played some Resident Evil, but I don't really feel qualified to speak on that game just yet because I haven't played enough.
Yeah, I want to play that. It just came out.
It seems lit.
So forgive
it
us.
It seems lit. Like, it's like 8 hours, which is like perfect.
That's what I love to see.
Yeah. And even the first like 40 minutes were... There was some interesting stuff going on already. So, yeah, I don't know. I'll talk about it next episode.
You want to just do some listener questions?
Sure.
A little short ep.
Shorty.
I guess almost an hour. It's more than a lot of podcasts. Oh, this first question's great. David New on the Discord asks, what's the benefit of supporting Bad End on Patreon?
Well, funny you should ask, listeners. If you subscribe to Bad End on Patreon, patreon.com/badend, you get access to our lovely Discord and then also some fun treats, including recently the launch of Funland Bad End subscribers. Free access to that. Because we are part of Superculture, we're going to have collabs like that in the future. You'll get like just access to stuff like that. If you are subbed to us, make sure you go grab Funland because you have access to that first issue. Check your Patreons and it's in there. In addition, yeah, you get access to our Discord and we need to do more.
I think it's a good question because I think we're trying to figure that out a little bit. I think that when we started the Patreon, Superculture wasn't a thing. We did the game club thing like a few times and that was sort of cool. But I think the floor is open a little bit for what we want to do with that. I mean, one thing that's true is that the money we get from the Patreon does help us. Like it helps us keep our audio gear nice. Like we upgraded our mic setup. So that's why the podcast sounds really good. The podcast doesn't make itself, you know, we take a few hours to record it. Josh takes a few hours to edit it. Some of that goes to that work. And I think that the other thing is like hosting fees, you know, Simplecast is not cheap for like the tier that we have for like hosting the podcast. That stuff is there. We use it to pay for other stuff. So I think that just any money given to the Patreon is obviously much appreciated because it does keep the lights on and Bad End HQ. But I think we're also looking for new stuff, like things that we want to do with it.
Yeah. We have some stuff coming up, that will definitely, the support of our listeners will definitely partially come through for that again. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just like upkeep costs, gear and equipment costs, and then growing out the podcast costs, which is, it all kind of adds up in the end. So we are looking for new ways to like actually provide you guys with content besides the actual just the show. So yeah, let us know if you have any more ideas for stuff like that.
I do also want to, I know, listen, if you're listening to this podcast and you don't back us on Patreon, let me just sell you on the Discord really fast, because I think a lot of people have a Discord channel and We do too. But I will say, if you like what you hear on Bad End, the Discord is like a continuation of that. Not just like we keep talking about what we talked about on the episode, but I think a lot of what we talk about and the way we talk about games and like music and other things on the podcast is like shared with a lot of the people in the Discord. And it's like, it's a place that it's a community of people, obviously, because it's now the Superculture Discord. So it's, if you're backing anything in Superculture, you will also get this Discord. It's just like a great place to be and like talk about video games and like music and anime, making games, games crit, all this kind of stuff. It's like, I think it's definitely my primary place now that I talk about video games outside of being on this podcast. And I think that everyone in there is coming from sort of a different background, has different opinions on all that stuff. And I think it's been sort of really exciting to watch the Discord sort of grow and like find other people who join it, who in some senses also like disagree with us on the podcast, which is like totally welcome and fine. Like we are by no means like, we're not like, I don't think that we're like celebrities of our Discord or something. It feels like we're just hanging out with everyone, sort of creating the space together. So if you like, you know, what we talk about on here and you want to talk to other people about that stuff or tell us we're wrong or tell us we're right or talk about anime, like it's a cool place. It's a decent, and it's like, also it's like, it's kind of slow in a nice way. Like it's active, but it's like a slow burn. It's not one of these Discords that's got thousands of people in it that is just like impossible to get into the stream of. Like every channel, people are sort of active every day, but it's not like
it's some not an overwhelming stream of like messages at all times.
Yeah, it's like very manageable. It's so, and that's not because it's dead, to be clear. It's just like, it's just chill. Everyone's in there just kind of talking about what's going on. So if that sounds like something that you're interested in, back us on Patreon. Definitely like get access to the Discord and come hang out with us and talk about video games and whatever else.
Life. And come hang out with the LA Bad Enders.
Yeah,
because we're probably gonna. I really want to have like an LA Bad End meetup. Because I've actually met like a few people in our Discord, hung out with them. Cool folk. Yeah,
we're gonna do a New York one too, and then the pandemic happened, so that might still happen once that shit lifts.
Yeah.
So.
But.
And then his next question.
Is Peter Molyneux a pathological liar?
I think that Peter Molyneux is in a bad spot where he's like such a figure that has to answer like press people. And I think that a lot of press people don't understand that. Like, I think that he oversells himself, but also I think that his ideas often get like heavily de-scoped because he's dreaming too big. And that doesn't mean that I think that he's some great thinker, but I think I feel like he honestly believes in himself enough, but then also that he has like this weird short-sightedness where he forgets that like his shit never happens the way it's supposed to.
I also think every video game exec is a pathological liar.
And that.
Like if you're working at a corporation and you're making a product and people are asking you questions about that product, you're fucking lying out your teeth all the time. A lot of the times it's like shrouded in some wordplay / PR'd messaging, but you're never just selling the thing that you're selling. You know, there's always some BS there.
Well, especially because like every game that he's always peddling is like you can be whoever you want to be. You can do
It's the biggest game
anything.
Ever. Yeah, you're going to feel things you've never felt in a video game before.
Maybe Peter Molyneux doesn't play video games. And he's like, this game's bigger than Fable 2. It's like, to him, his world is so small. He's like, this is the best game ever because all he's played is Fable.
I realized over the years I have a soft spot for Fable. You know,
Fable's like one of the coziest games.
It's so cozy and it's so like it's got so much weird, dumb personality to it with just like the way that its characters look and how everyone's built fucking weird. And it's like,
dude, do you remember all the moral panic around Fable? That was like, there was like a full blown, like Fable is ruining the children thing. Do you remember this?
Maybe.
It was just like, cause you could like be the devil or something.
Oh yeah. Cause you could be good or bad. And it was like the most cartoonish.
Like, you can be a devil in this game.
Yeah. But it was just really like you were doing the bad things and like being the bad guy essentially to get the bad end.
That was going to corrupt the children.
Yeah. Oh God. What a game. I loved just like the bloom, all the fucking,
oh, the bloom. Everything so much was bloom.
So like just sun pouring through everything. It was very comfy. Fable game. I need to see what did the game actually look like?
Lots of bloom.
And all the gear that you would get was like fucking weird. The art direction was basically like fantasy phone game art direction.
It was like knockoff Warcraft.
Yeah, like Ebony, if it was a 3D fucking fantasy game. So much bloom, bro.
I want to play Fable again now.
Yeah, I want this game again. And then how they had the little glittery line that showed you exactly where to go at all times. That's
dude,
good
that
shit.
Dude, that made gamers so mad.
It like did.
The breadcrumbs
but
thing.
It was so good. Like, it's so good. Fuck.
Like, games
fuck
are
people.
Fucking
who,
going to shit.
Like, not every game needs to have that, whatever. But honestly, dude, it sort of should. What's the difference between that and like being in Shadow of the Colossus when you hold up your sword and then when you point it the right way, it turns into a beam of light?
Just no, can't don't let them know that they're wrong.
Don't
they
say.
Do the same shit in Assassin's Creed now?
But man, that glittery line, dude. Even Morrowind and or well, not Morrowind, but like Oblivion and stuff had the little like compass needle,
yeah,
that shows you where to go. It's like, okay, well, if you could make it a little glittery line, even better, you know?
Yeah.
And the combat was just so dumb and simple.
It's just chunky.
You would chop off people's heads and stuff, but it was still super cartoonish.
Can you play Fable on like Game Pass?
I think maybe Fable 2.
Have they been ported?
I don't know.
I mean, there's some like remaster.
We need another Fable, dude. Let's get Fable 4. Fable 5.
Isn't
what
there,
Fable
there is like
it?
A Fable. There is a Fable 4. They like announced
Fuck.
It.
Fable.
It's called, you ready for this? Fable.
Fable Anniversary is out. Remastered. Yeah,
oh,
this is that
they
shit.
Got Fable Anniversary and Fable 3.
Fable
I feel like
Anniversary
Fable 2
came
was the
out
one that
in
I
2014,
like.
Dude.
Yeah.
And it's $35.
Yeah. On Game Pass.
Come on, dude. Let's go, Fable.
Fable, let's go. I'm sure we'll see some Fable shit this year at E3, actually.
All right. Well, I guess we'll find out. We'll see if you're wrong about that.
You ever just remember that there's new consoles out? Because I'm looking at this and I'm like, oh, yeah.
No, I know you do.
It's just crazy. Wait, can you not play Fable 2 on PC?
No, apparently not.
It's only on Xbox? Damn, I just want to play Fable now. I'm like looking at these screenshots being like, this game is so dumb.
That's what's great about it, though, you know?
This is like the B-tier game I can like get behind.
I don't get, like, it's just so funny that the whole selling point behind it was that it's going to be like some revolutionary thing. Like, just say, like, it's fucking, it's a fantasy that bullshit that you, that's exactly what you want, you know? Like, you get to customize your character, it's easy, it's kind of edgy, but still cartoonish and playful and fun. Damn. Mm. And then, like, right after that, we got fucking 10 years of shooting monsters in brown environments.
We got Modern War.
Oh, Modern War.
Fair. Remember when war didn't change? War never changed. War always changing. War's different.
Do you think we almost feel like an innate need to hit the hour and a half mark every episode that we say it's going to be short?
We just got to keep going. All right, we got one more question. Is Ken Levine a pathological liar?
Isn't it Levine?
I don't think he's really lied about stuff. Levine? I don't think Ken Levine's really lied.
I mean, that's what I was saying about how every fucking exec is basically kind of a liar.
I think that he might have really fucked over people in his studio, but liar? Yeah, it's like, is big studio exec a liar? Probably.
Yeah.
But also not for the reasons that you would think they're a liar. I think it's like really crazy. I'm not trying to be sympathetic to these people, but because I also like, I would love to run a multi-million-dollar studio. But I do think there's some real shit where like games make so much fucking money that like they're like so perfectly crafted in time to be like delivered at like the right time that if you say something to fuck that up, someone's like looking at their balance sheet and they're like, you just cost me $60 million. I think that that's right. Like a really shitty pressure for anybody to bear. And so they'll like say stuff, even if it's not true, because they'd rather like them and the people who like back them financially would rather you be excited for a game that ultimately sucks than like you getting like not excited for a game that they like need to sell or something. So,
well, like they're a mouthpiece for a business. Yeah.
They're a mouthpiece for like a ton of other market dynamics and can also like be bad people, to be clear. It's not like they're only ever great people, but.
Right. So, I mean, I think in remembering that, it's just very much the case that, and it, like, when we say lying, it's, I think one of the funny things about that interview is that it's like lying is different when we're talking about people who work at corporations, right? This is like the kind of lies that you see every day of like people bullshitting.
Mm-hmm.
They're selling, you know? So it's like lying, but it's selling. And it's a thing that you encounter all the time, but it's not like this guy is a, it's not like he has some condition. His condition is that he's fucking selling games and telling you the talking points that his PR people are telling you to do. You know?
Yeah, I feel like there's something where it's like easy for people to assume that people who work in games or like these like big figures are somehow like you associate similar things with them as you would like other artists that are like other like director, like film directors or authors or like painters or something. And I think there's like so much more market shit is caught up with what the jobs these people do, because like oftentimes their company is being bankrolled. Like Fable, I guess that company might be independent, but I'm pretty sure. Yeah. Microsoft Game Studios like made Fable 2. They like published that game. Like Molyneux might've been on the team that was like doing it at Lionhead, but like their money comes from fucking Microsoft. It's not like he's really able to speak effectively about anything because someone like six people ahead of him is doing shit. And maybe that's their fault for like buying into his vision and then him not being able to deliver. And I've heard stories of like people who worked at Lionhead and it sounds like a fucking shit show. So not good for anybody. But also like talking to just like, you're basically talking to the middle manager when you're talking to like Peter Molyneux or like Ken Levine, and they're going to like tell you some middle manager bullshit because you can't actually talk to the person who's their actual boss. The only thing they can tell you is positive stuff. Otherwise they get fired.
And it's just so weird coming from people who are supposed to be like industry insiders, you know, like,
yeah,
you should know that a video game exec, someone who's, you know, a director or someone who's visible in this shit is going to be not always be telling the 100% truth about what's happening in a video game. You know,
yeah,
like you should know that they are like delusionally pulling for their own game. Like who is like actually in the industry does not know that, you know?
Yeah.
That's what's weird about these things. And I'm like,
that's the thing that sucks too, is like Fable is like, these are like fine games. Like when you actually play them with like distance, you're like, oh, this is fine. It's not some like earth shaking difference thing, but yeah.
I mean, if you listen to everything that every video game marketer tells you and you take them 100% at face value and expect exactly that of video games, I got bad news for you, buddy.
You're going to get radicalized to the alt-right because that's the path there.
It's just, it's a sign of either gullibility video game or PR just people. Like lack of awareness about how things in the world operate, you know?
Like video game PR people oversell you on stuff and then you get disproportionately.
I thought Mass Effect was going to have hundreds of different endings, each with different consequences and different cash-ins on the thematic elements that I had throughout the series. I mean, yeah, sure. Like, it was a bit of a disappointment. However, did you really think they were going to deliver on all that? Like, I don't know. Even I was, you know, I was like in college when Mass Effect, you know, 2 or whatever is coming out. And I was like, there's no way they're going to fucking be able to tie all this shit in the last one. Like, there's no way, you know?
Yeah.
They're going to have some bullshit, like, made up ending that just ties everything together. Maybe like a couple different ones of those, you know? Maybe
like two different colors or something.
Like, don't be the person who's like somehow hinging on that, where like your own well-being depends on whether Mass Effect 3 has the ending that you want or not, you know?
Don't be that person. Don't let games radicalize you. Don't believe corporations. Support indie developers.
Yep.
Vote Democrat. No, vote. Don't even vote Democrat, because sometimes the Democrat platform's weird. Vote Working Families Party line. But register as a Democrat. Or actually, register as Working Families Party. Actually, it depends on where you live. If you have ranked choice voting, register in the Working Families Party. If you don't have ranked choice voting, look to Democratic Party. You want to wrap this up?
Yeah.
Take us home.
All right, friends. This is Bad End Podcast. We appreciate your support and for hanging out with us every couple weeks. We are going to be coming up on our 100th episode pretty soon. We're going to be doing some interesting, fun stuff for that. So keep an eye out. You can follow us on Twitter at Bad End Podcast. You can email us at badendpod@gmail.com. We invite you to rate us and review us on iTunes, as that is very helpful. And go check out Super Culture Network. We got Funland, we got Bullet Points, we got Savoir Faire, we got Bad End. Fun place to be. Potential new projects coming up in the future, so keep an eye out for stuff. And again, thanks for listening. We'll see you in a couple weeks. Later.
See y'all.